This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Coach I'm not Glenn the Geek. I'm Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
How do you mess up your own name?
Anyway. Sheer talent.
I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 9th, episode 1648. Today's show is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Greetings, Mary. Thank you for coming back to Horses in the Morning, despite the fact that you have to work with an epic fail of a co-host today.
Oh, that's okay. I just, you know, put it in my contract that my salary needs to be higher. So
okay.
We're all good.
We'll double that zero for you. Woohoo!
Okay. I'm not good at math, but I'm thinking that's a good deal.
There we go. Well, thanks for coming back. As I alluded to a moment ago, Mary is here on a monthly basis, the second Thursday of every month, and she stops by and chats about all things training. And particularly lots of Western sorts of things, but that doesn't mean there's lots of stuff here that doesn't apply to every horse and rider and equestrian. And today's topic, I think, is going to do just that. And we'll get to that in a minute. We're going to talk a little bit about something called chaining behaviors. But before we do that, I want to find out what you've been doing. We need to catch up because we have not chatted since last month.
Well, I tell you what, spring has definitely sprung at the ranch, and I am not at all bummed about that because I know in other parts of the country, they're still covered in snow. So, I mean, it just seems like last week, all of a sudden, my pastures have grass, it's gorgeous out, and I have a new bunch of youngsters in training. I've talked about them before. They're a bunch of colts from the Longhorn Cattle Company in Washington. So they're also very happy that spring's here because they've been in belly-high snow all winter.
They are fuzzballs. I've been following their pictures on Facebook, and they look like little tiny yaks.
They do, or like Scottish Highland cattle.
Yes, Scottish Highland cattle. That's a good description.
I'm sure their owner would be thrilled to hear that, but it's true. Well, and this week they've started blowing their coats like crazy, which also happens to be the same week I'm crawling on all of them bareback. So, I have a Carmelo and a Perlino, so I'm just covered in white fur most of the day.
Oh my gosh, and it almost, this time of year, it jumps off the horse and gets on you.
Oh yeah. Well, and then if you're trying to use the shedding comb, then it's in the air and you're breathing it in. And then, you know, at night I'm coughing up hairballs. So I'm sure it's good for the lungs.
Coughing up hairballs. Do we need to get you some hairball remedy?
Yeah.
Cheetos flavored.
I just walk across the living room and hack and then keep walking like a cat does.
Oh my gosh. That's funny. So are these two-year-olds, yearlings? What have you got?
These are two-year-olds, and they're all foundation-bred babies. A couple of fillies. Oh, I do have one three-year-old. Forgot about that one. The bloodlines are really pretty cool because this particular ranch has been breeding these horses for, generations. And so you can see the ranch's name all the way back to like the 50s. And the reason, you know, you asked me off air, you know, like, can't you find any good horses in Texas?
Yeah, aren't there any good ones in Texas? You had to go all the way to Washington to get horses?
I know. Yeah. And that's a good point. But and there are great horses in Texas. You know, I ran into these colts. These were a couple of colts that I started at this event I do, the Central Washington State Fair. And got to talking with the owners, and they have such a neat story, and they're really great people. But what I found kind of unique about this ranch, and they're a ranching heritage breeder, which means that, you know, they have to meet a certain number of guidelines to do that. And you know, it's a lot to do with breeding foundation, quarter horse bloodlines. But what I liked about these guys is everything they have bred is something they have ridden and have decided, you know, this is a great horse. This is a great riding horse. I'm going to put it in my, you know, I'm going to put it in my broodmare band, or I'm going to stand it at stud. And you would be surprised, you know, I've worked in the performance horse industry for a number of years. You'd be surprised how often that does not happen, which just, it seems silly to me. You know, I've worked at barns where a horse went lame for whatever reason at like 3 years old. And they're like, well, let's breed it because it can't. Yeah, I'm like, okay, for one thing, this horse has a propensity for going lame. And another thing, you've not ridden it and it's not proven itself. But on the other hand, I do sort of understand what they're saying. They're like, well, it's not making me any money as a riding horse, so she's got to earn her keep. So let's breed it. And, you know, obviously that has a lot of ramifications, but, you know, this is definitely not the case with this particular ranch. These guys, you know, they know these horses really well. They can tell you all about the horse's mother and their, you know, their dad and their uncle. And so these colts, there's nothing super duper fancy on their papers, but, what I'm really excited about is they are, really, really good minded. Yeah. We got some doozies today. Like there's like 30 questions and they're all several pages long and they're very good.
And you have to wait, folks. You have to wait because we have a really cool topic to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What is it?
Now, can you do the stole a dog story quick, though? I really, in my show notes, it says here, I stole a dog, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. I can just stop me when I'm going over. Okay. But yeah, so, you know, we're out in the country, a very unique part of the country. And, you know, I've told quirky stories about it before. But it's not uncommon to have some stray dogs show up, and, you know, the dogs around here are sort of stray, but people sort of also own them and just have never neutered them. And, you know, and then there's dogs that I don't recognize that have clearly been dumped. So I thought we had one of those show up, and I usually don't kind of acknowledge the dog or anything because I have a lot of animals here. I have dogs of my own, I have chickens. And so it's best not to make it think that it can come here and hang out because you just never know. But this guy showed up, didn't look like any dog I've seen in the area. And he was just really sad and pathetic looking. Like, you'd go to pet him and he just closed his little eyes right before you touched him. Like, you know, someone's probably bopped him around a bit. He's not neutered. He's still got his dew claws and he just looks so sad and pathetic. Like, he just needs a friend. So we crumbled and, you know, got the dog a bed and some toys and put some food out for him. And, you know, we're looking at him. He's a big white dog and he looks like he might be part Pyrenees or one of those sort of guard dogs that people get to guard their sheep. And we're thinking, well, heck, you know, he could just hang out here and be a nice little dog to have around because he was very sweet and didn't mess with my animals. And thought, you know, yeah, okay, we'll take, because he was there for a few days. And so, so we're like, all right, you know, this, we'll just hang on to this guy and you know, he could be our guard dog. And, you know, we're looking into, we got to get him gelded or neutered. I get those two mixed up. We got to get him neutered and, you know, we'll see if we can get him in early at the vets and get him a nice big fluffy bed, some toys and a little collar. And then he just left. And yeah,
he heard your plans.
Really, dude? I know. Yes. He probably heard us talking about that. And then he just left. And then so we're like, okay. And my assistant who is, who's working here and living on the ranch, she has a little, mini Aussie, dog that's not fixed. And she came back from a weekend off and she said, you know what me and my boyfriend were talking about? We think that this dog is, because the dog was gone. We're like, okay, well, there goes that plan. And kind of, you know, worried that he had a collar on when he left. I'm like, great, you know, hopefully he doesn't, you know, get hung up somewhere. We don't know. Couldn't find him. But she said, you know, I think that what that dog probably is it is probably someone's guard dog that they're using for sheep or whatever. And it probably sensed that her little dog was coming into season and came wandering over here. Yeah. So the dog did come back yesterday without a collar.
So whoever owns him took the collar off.
Yes, because it would be very unlikely he wriggled out of it or broke it. So someone probably had their
You know what
dog
you need to do? Tie a note around his neck. Instead of putting a collar on, tie a note around his neck that says, please get this dog fixed.
So, we have a two-timing dog. He's got two families now.
Actually, way, way back in the day, we had a farm dog. And we lived in a very, very remote farm. And she hadn't been fixed yet. And when she came into heat, we were very careful to keep her with us or keep her penned up so she was never loose. We actually had a male dog that, of course, found her because a male dog can find a female dog in heat from 100 miles away. He actually chewed a hole in the barn door. Yes, I am not kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
Chewed right through. Now, this is a 120-year-old barn. It's a sturdy door, and he actually chewed a hole through it. And it was a little dog. He was about 4.5 inches tall, right through it. And needless to say, a few weeks later, we had puppies. But that was something else. That was epic that he chewed a hole right through the door to find a girl. So, yeah, never underestimate the power of hormones.
Oh,
so on
no,
to our
geez,
training
well,
tip.
See all my. I have a, oh yeah. okay. So training tip. This is a concept that I learned, learning clicker training. This is not necessarily a clicker topic, but, I learned about the concept of chaining behaviors together. So in clicker training, you can chain behaviors or back chain behaviors, to where you can get your animal, your horse, or your dog to perform a sequence of behaviors in a row. And the really cool thing about this, how this works is when you set it up, is the behavior that comes next rewards the behavior that happened before. So let's say, like a really quick example is I clicker training with Guthrie, teaching him liberty. And what I did first is I created a behavior where I taught him to come to me. And so every time I said the word here, he was supposed to come to me. And every time he did, I would click and treat. And so I practiced that over and over and over and over again to where he knew anytime I said the word here, he comes up to me and he knows that I will click and he knows that he'll get rewarded. So what I did then is I worked on several other behaviors separately, and then I started putting this chain together. So we knew that he knew that if I say the word here, he comes up to me, I click and treat. So he really wanted to hear that word because
that was
he
his
only
favorite.
Associated
yes,
it with really happy, warm, fuzzy feelings.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And it truly is his favorite thing. So, you know, this would be a good thing to teach if you've got a hard to catch horse.
Yeah.
So then I taught him to back up at Liberty. And I had worked on that separately by itself where I told him to back up, click and treat, back up, click and treat, back up, click and treat. But then what I started doing, I had these two behaviors. I had come to me and had back away. So I wanted to combine these together. So I had one fluid motion for one click. So what I taught him to do is I gave him the back cue. And then when he backed, however sufficiently I wanted him to back, I said the word here. And I tell you what, his little eyes started sparkling and his ears pricked up. And he was like, oh, hot dog. Yes, I love that one because that means I get to come to you and you're going to click and treat. So then I added another behavior behind that. And I said, okay, this time what I want you to do is you're going to back up and you're going to step your shoulders over until you're standing perpendicular to me. So he already knew this behavior, but now, you know, again, I'm combining behaviors. So I taught him to back up, And the next thing is he'd turn his shoulder. So it'd be like a 90 degree turn left or right. Mm-hmm. And when he did that sufficiently, I said, here. And he was like, oh boy, you said the word that I really like, because every time I come to you, then I get a click and treat. So now I have three behaviors happening off of one click. I had a fluid chain where he would back up, turn a 90 degree turn, hear the cue to come to me, which is here. And then he'd come to me and click and treat. So then I said, okay, now what I want you to do, I want you to back up, turn a 90 degree turn. I want you to walk forward a few steps. And when he did that sufficiently, I'd say here, and he'd come to me and click and treat. And so you could see where this goes, where you just keep adding links on that chain. And you could do a whole liberty routine on this. And this is, you know, the people have questions. One of the biggest questions I get with clicker training is, how do I stop clicking and treating so much? This is one of those ways.
Ah,
so,
gotcha.
Yeah. So if you're not into clicker training, how could you use this concept of chaining behaviors?
Yeah,
to work if you're just not really into clicking and treating, which is no problem. So I kind of accidentally discovered this concept a few years ago by accident, before I was really hardcore into clicker training. And I was training for a Mustang makeover. And the year before, I had entered my second Mustang makeover, and my horse was amazing. She was probably one of my best trained horses, but we did not make the finals because I was not experienced. In fact, we placed like middle of the pack out of 80 horses. We weren't even close to making the finals. And so what I did, I learned a lot about things that I hadn't worked on at home that ended up failing me in the event, and particularly the trail class. Because what I had done is I had practiced a lot of trail obstacles, but I didn't think about what would happen when I got to the show. And a lot of other people didn't too. So here's one particular example and how I got it to work the next time and actually did make the finals. So there's almost always a drag element in these Mustang makeovers where there's a log or something and it's got a lariat already on it, and the lariat's coiled up and it's hanging on something. You're supposed to walk up to that, grab your lariat, dally if you want, you don't have to dally, and drag the obstacle either a certain distance or around another obstacle. But there's always something like that. And plenty of people, myself included, practice dragging. But what we didn't take into account is the thing that they hang the obstacle on is really scary, and it's usually different every time.
Oh, yeah, so you're sometimes right, they do. They'll hang it on something post that has like streamers on it or something. Yeah.
Like tree branches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like one year they had like a windmill, and it's just this kind of big ominous obstacle in the middle of the arena. And if you're on a 4-month Mustang and you're like, just side pass over to that big towering scary thing, they're like, no, I'm not going to do that. Because a lot of us don't practice the part of dragging an obstacle where we have to go. Yeah, usually you have a lariat on your saddle and you rope whatever and then drag. So I realized this. I was like, okay, the next year, it's going to be like that. There's going to be a rope hanging on a big scary obstacle. So I thought, you know what I need to get my horse good at is side passing up to scary things. So what I did the next year is I hung all sorts of things all over the arena fence. I hung rope, whatever thing I could find, halters and lead ropes. I hung them all over the fence, all around, and over different obstacles. And I taught my horse beforehand to side pass up to things, and I could pick up things off the fence. So I taught my horse how to do that, and you would think that would be sufficient enough of, you know, now he knows how to side pass things off the fence. I wanted him to crave it. I wanted him to be in the trail pattern and go, oh boy, we get to side pass up to things. So what I did is anytime my horse needed a break, so let's say I was working on loping circles or sliding stops or spins, or things that he needed to make him tired and he would need a break. And So what I would do is every time he needed to catch his air and he was a little tired and he wanted to stand still and relax, I would side pass him up to the fence and tearing up, and I might rub him with that thing if it was a lariat or if it was a jacket. And so he became my horse the next year became really, really happy to side pass up to things and pick things up off the fence. So when it came to the makeover that year, he had no problem doing it. So I just wanted him to sort of have that feeling of not just being obedient to what I wanted, but to actually crave doing the thing I'm asking him to do.
So you're teaching him a behavior, and the behavior in and of itself becomes a reward, psychologically at least.
Yeah, you know, if you tie it to something he's going to want to do or something that he will crave as a reward. So in the first example I gave with Guthrie, it would be clicking and treating. With my particular Mustang that year, you know, there's times in the ride where I like to stop and let them soak, and I'm not going to bother them with a whole training. And so they start craving those periods where they get to, you know, they're tired, they're probably a little sweaty, and they get to stop and rest. So I just tell them, listen, you know, you're ready for a break. I'm going to let you stop and rest. But while you do that, why don't you do it next to the fence and just let me kind of carry it. And so after a while, you'll have your horse, my horse, when it was time for a break, he was like, where did this obstacle, and picked the lariat up off the fence. And so those are just a few examples, but you know, the possibilities are endless. You can do the same thing. I've done the same thing using a bridge. If I'm scared about crossing the bridge, is I'll teach him to cross the bridge. In, I'm just going to incorporate it into my ride. So anytime they need a break and they just want to chill out, we'll chill out on the bridge.
Chill out on the bridge. Ah, very interesting. So you park your horse trailer in the arena, and every time your horse needs to take a break and catch his breath, you can go stand inside the horse trailer and do it. I like it.
That's a good example. Yeah, that's exactly right.
There we go. I like that. That's cool. Well, that's great. We could go on and on about chaining behavior, but I think we need to take a quick break for we're going to hear from our sponsor, Horseware. We're going to hear a little bit about Ice Vibe. And then I believe it's going to be Jared Rogerson up on our song of the day. And then we come back, maybe we'll chat a little bit more about chaining behaviors and answer some listener questions.
In the world of horse racing and elite equestrian sports, it's all about how to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe is a truly portable and highly efficient circulation therapy system for your horse. Before activity, prepare to prevent damage by using the Ice Vibe's vibration pads. Repair after the event by using the unique combination of cold packs and vibration to minimize swelling and encourage blood flow. And because it's battery powered, Ice Vibe is truly portable. The essential and affordable tool to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe.
You can find out more details about Ice Vibe at ice-vibe.com or horseware.com, or ask your local tack shop or online supplier for more information about Ice Vibe circulation therapy from Horseware.
This weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cussing this damn heat all day long. There's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I write a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey, it's a heyday. Hey, hey. Payday. My boss is such a jerk, I swear he's never been outside. And I've just been his yes sir man, and I'm running out of time. Everything about this is all wrong. It's time to live some dreams before they're gone. Hey, hey,
as I'm going down this road. Cause I'll be there around 8 o'clock in time for my next show. My spouse from ear to ear where it belongs. Everybody's dancing and singing along. Hey, hey, it's a heyday. Hey, hey, yeah, I'm making my own payday. Hey, hey, it's a heyday. Hey, hey, yeah, I'm making my own payday.
And that's Jared Rogerson with Heyday, and you can find his music on iTunes, or you can just search for him online, Jared Rogerson. And welcome back to the Mary Kitzmiller Monthly Show, brought to you by Horseware. She's here the second Thursday of every month, and we chat about all things training, as you may have heard earlier. And we just got done chatting a little bit about chaining behaviors, and I'm going to go out and have some good times with that with Nigel in the arena, I think. And I think now it's time to answer some of these extremely difficult questions submitted by listeners. Would you like to pick one, Mary?
Oh, yes. Okay. Let's see. Okay, we have a good one. How would you teach a young horse and or off the track thoroughbred to collect and bring his head down? And does it require a contraption? That's by Stephanie Eileen.
Ooh, that's a toughie.
Yeah, it's a good one. You know, and I will say there's a million different ways to do this, and a lot of programs have different styles, and I myself have a few different methods. As far as does it require a contraption, no, probably not. If what you mean by contraption is like side reins or draw reins or martingales, no. I mean, you don't even need a bit, really. You know, if you've got the time and the know-how. Here are some exercises that I do to help get softness and collection or to teach your horse to go long and low. So collection does not necessarily mean head down. Horses can collect with a very elevated pole, and some horses are more level or even have a bit of a down sloping top line, and so every horse is going to look a little bit different when they're in collection. But so what I start with on a colt that's never learned it or needs to relearn it is I work on a lot of lateral. And a very, very simple exercise that you can start with very early on is a very simple serpentine. I don't go crazy on the biomechanics of where I want the horse to place whatever vertebrae or where exactly I put my legs. I simply ask my horse to go left and right and then left and then right again. And I do this using only a direct rein in the beginning. So I'll start it on colts as early as 4 or 5 rides where I just tip their nose to the left and I want them to go left and then tip their nose to the right and I want them to go right. Now, in the beginning, they will drop their shoulders in the rib cage and may fall down on the front end. I don't worry about trying to pick those shoulders up or dig my leg into them to try to keep that rib cage picked up. I will place my legs in a certain way as I do my serpentine. So for me, I will place my outside leg slightly forward, my inside leg slightly back. Because my outside leg, and I know dressage folks tend to do their leg cues a little bit different, but for me, my outside leg tells the horse's shoulder to go somewhere. My inside leg will tell the horse's rib cage to soften. So on a baby colt, they're not going to know what my leg cues mean, but I'm still going to just place my legs there and make a habit of it. The only thing I'm going to do with my legs, like that will compel the horse to do something, is I want to use my legs to keep them to move forward. Forward is the most important thing. If they slow down or they start pivoting on either end, I will take less bend and move them forward. So in the beginning, with young horse or stiff horse, I take a very, very slight bend. So that serpentine is just, it's almost a straight line. As the horse gets softer, you can take a more loopy serpentine that looks like maybe the letter S. So all I cared about in the beginning is if I tip your nose left, go left. Then when I tip your nose right, go right. And I'll do that over and over and over again. It's a great warm-up exercise because if you're on a colt that's really fresh, or say you're riding down the trail and you're not sure what it's going to do, I give them that little serpentine job to do because I'm already halfway to a one-rein stop if they freak out. I'll just take that bend even more until they yield their hindquarters.
Ooh, so, good idea. I like that. Yeah.
It's a great warm-up exercise. It's a great cool-down exercise. So you can't do it too much. You know, trees out in your pasture are a really good place. Serpentine around all these trees. And what I always notice without trying to make it happen is that horse's chin is going to start to soften. Their jaw is going to start to soften. They're going to start naturally keeping their shoulders straight and their rib cage balanced. I'll use a lot of rein in the beginning, but then after a while, I can actually use mostly my leg, and the horse has just gotten so used to kind of bending to the left and going left and bending to the right and going left, right, that it's also a really great way to get your horse working off of only your legs. So you will notice a huge change in your horse if you do this over and over and over. You know, really hollow-backed, U-necked, high-headed horses will start rounding out over the top line. That pole will start dropping really nice and low. So that's a great exercise to start on. And then what you can even do over time is, I said in the beginning, I use a direct rein. So I'm either, you know, if we're going left, I'm picking up the left rein. If we're, you know, I don't do anything with the right rein. But then when we go right, I switch. I'm going to use the right rein to make them go right. I'm not going to pick up the left rein at all. After a while, you can start working that indirect rein into the equation, and getting, as they're going left and right laterally, you can start asking for a little bit of vertical. So what I mean by that is not only are they going, they're bending slightly to the left or bending slightly to the right, you're going to pick up a little bit of indirect rein and get them to sort of relax their jaw in a little bit more of a vertical headset. So that's a very simple exercise that I do, and I would say just lateral movements in general. Teach your horse a side pass. Teach him to do shoulder and teach him haunches in. I would say as far as a headset, which a lot of people will think that that is collection.
No,
but
no, no,
really
not the same, not the same, not the same.
Yeah. what they're talking about is, oh, I want him to tuck his nose in all pretty. And I've been there. We focus so hard on that, we forget what the rest of the body is doing.
Yeah.
I will say, as far as what's going on in the horse's head and neck, it's a good indicator of what is going wrong in their body. So if they're high-headed or they're really stiff on one side, then it's something messed up in their body and in their feet. So, you know, work on that. Get them working lateral. Get them to where you can put their feet anywhere. When you do that, and you do it in a way that keeps them calm, they will soften their head and neck as much as they naturally can. And you can get any horse to drop their head all the way to the ground doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so those are some things, you know, just a few ideas for exercises of how I get them to sort of soften and use themselves a little bit more.
Yeah, and if I'll add a little something more to that, coming from a predominantly English background, one of the biggest mistakes I see people making, because teaching your horse to relax through his jaw and his neck and his shoulder, which is the prerequisite to the rest of the back relaxing, which is the prerequisite to collection, is they trot around in a circle, because English riders spend a lot of time trotting. They'll trot around the circle for 7.5, 8 minutes, 10 minutes, struggling, trying to get that horse to soften and stretch down or come up off of their inside shoulder for 10 minutes straight. And they get it for 4 strides total. Well, you've just spent all but 45 seconds practicing it wrong.
Exactly.
And then they wonder why they never get any better at it. So, like you said, with your serpentines, change it up. Do not be afraid to change it up. If you go in a 20-meter circle and you get exactly what your horse, what you want from your horse. He softens his top line. He stretches down a little bit. He comes up off that inside shoulder. Switch it up quick before he has a chance to get to lose that, and spend more time practicing it correctly by changing how you ask for it, where you ask for it, what gait you ask for it. Something I learned very late in my riding career, that don't practice it wrong 40 million times. Find a way that you can be successful quicker. Don't trot around in circles for 20 minutes wrong. It's just, it's not helping.
Yeah. And you know, and that brings up, you know, another point is don't hold your horse forever.
Oh, yeah. With,
you know, like, yeah. And so, you know, we learned this riding Western, of course, because a typical Western event, you want to show your horse on a nice loose rein. And, but I still also want my Western horses to be able to hold and maintain collection without getting heavier, without getting offended about it. So, you know, the order in which I do things on a Western horse is lots and lots of loose rein in the beginning. I may pick up on that horse 300,000 times in one session. But I'm just, all I'm doing is I'm picking up, waiting for a feel, releasing, picking up, waiting for a feel. Same thing with any of the movements I'm doing. You know, I don't just say, okay, we're going to push your hip up. We're going to do haunches in for half an hour today. And I'm going to hold and hold until it feels right. I'm going to pick up until I get something that's sort of close to what I'm asking, and then release. And then the next time I pick up, okay, can you give me a little bit more than you gave me last time? And I pick up and release and pick up and release and pick up and release and pick up and release. And then once the horse understands when I pick up, you know, I'm going to ask for a certain feel, and they know exactly what to give me, and they know they'll be rewarded for it, then I'll start saying, okay, you're a big boy now. Can you hold that for a few strides? And then I'll start building into maintaining collection and softness for long periods of time. But I don't just, like, pick up on them and hold one day. I'll pick up and say, give me a few more strides now. Okay, now 20 strides, now 30 strides. Now hold this whole circle exactly like this. Keep your shoulder up for the whole circle. Keep soft in the bridle the whole circle. But that is about, you know, if I had a horse, the same horse training regularly every day, I'd say it'd be at least a year before I start doing that.
There you go. So, yeah, I like that. That's great. I'm gonna see, again, more ammo. Golly, I love doing Woo-hoo! This show. So I hope that helped you a little bit, Stephanie. What have we got coming up next?
Are we doing more questions?
Can we do another one? Can we?
Yes. Okay, let's see here. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, this one's kind of related. This is from Chelsea Cohn-Severs. I hope I pronounced that right. How do you deal with a horse that might have been started at an older age and doesn't have a lot of work ethic or a lot of try? It just seems to be a fine line between getting forward motion with relaxation and getting the horse nervous or anxious. This is such a good question, and it's one that confounds a lot of people, because I think the picture they have in their head when going out to ride every day is different than maybe what the horse can give them. So, you know, the question someone might have with a horse such as this is, you know, I just can't get him to hold the canter for more than a few strides. Mm-hmm. And I might ask them, well, you know, can you get them to do an extended walk for more than a few strides? And most of the time the answer is no. So on a horse like this, you are going to want to reward any sort of, you know, modicum of try big time. Make a huge deal out of it in the beginning. And we're going to start, you know, all the way down at the lowest transition that I can think of. So even from a halt, how easily does your horse step out of standing completely still? Do you have to kick him a couple of times before he goes? And if the answer is yes, then you don't even want to try the canter right now. You know, we're going to work on, okay, from the halt, can you easily roll into a nice, big swinging walk? And then from the walk, can you stride out as big as you possibly can? So an example I like to give is you want like a big extended fence checking walk. So if you're working on a ranch and you have to check fences all day, trotting the whole time and posting the whole time is going to be pretty hard on you. It'd be much easier to be able to walk that fence line. But in order to get it done in time, your horse has to have a really big, powerful walk. So I try to get my horse to do that. If I can get that walk to happen consistently and with duration, rolling him into a canter is easy. So, you know, with a horse such as this, if you know you're struggling to get him to walk or to do any kind of upward transition, you know, do what you need to do to get your horse to hit that level of speed that you're looking for. And as soon as he does it, relax. Big break. Release all pressure. Let him come all the way back down. Give him a second and then start again. So you'll be doing that a lot in the beginning. Just any time you feel he's giving you any sort of try whatsoever, release, reward, let him have a break, go again. Then, you know, he's going to realize that as long as he tries, he's going to get the rest that he craves. And you're going to sensitize him a little bit more. Then you can start saying, okay, now hold that gate a little longer. Hold it for a few more strides. And again, same thing with like picking up on your horse. Get a few more strides, and get them to maintain duration over time until you can put him in a gate, leave him there until you tell him to do otherwise.
Excellent. Wow. And it's been my experience with horses that have this mindset in that you have to sort of teach thinking forward. The progress is slower than I think it should be. I think I should be able to do this four times and voila, my horse will set off at a beautiful forward fence checking walk instantly. And it wasn't. It was a case of for weeks and weeks and weeks, I did not nag him with my aids. I simply said, we're going to stand and now we're going to walk. Woohoo! And we're going to walk with lots of enthusiasm for one third of the arena. And now we're going to take a loose rein walk break. And I had to do that for weeks and weeks and weeks without doing anything else that required nagging forward aids, because, you know, that's what you need to throw away, because that's what frequently causes the problem to begin with. But in the long term, it's amazing once that light bulb comes on and the horse does realize that he can get a reward for those kinds of tries, how it comes on and it stays on. And it was a sort of a retraining for both horse and rider. I had to learn to not nag with my aids, and the horse had to unlearn ignoring aids and relearn seeking those aids, going, ooh, tell me to do something. So that's a great process. And then just make sure you just don't try to get it done too quick.
Exactly. And, you know, if you think about it from the horse's point of view, because this is what I typically see with horses that don't go forward. For one thing, if you're riding a horse like this, I want you to check your heels. If your heels are up, you are nagging your horse, because those heels are likely dug into your horse's rib cage, even if you don't realize it. Because I tell people, I'm like, quit kicking your horse. They're like, I'm not. I'm like, well, your toes are down, your heels are up, your heels are dug into your horse's side. You definitely are. But we get into a habit because we're like, please don't stop cantering or please don't stop walking. So we get in a habit of nagging the horse. And, you know, if you think about it from the horse's viewpoint, the owner's like, please canter. And the horse is like, all right, I'm cantering. And the owner typically keeps the legs on and, you know, keeps the spur on, keeps the legs on, and is kicking every stride. And he's like, well, great. What incentive did I have to canter? Because you didn't stop, you know, so why don't I just not canter? And the same thing will happen, you know.
You're absolutely right. That is absolutely the case.
Yeah, you know, if you release, if you don't have to stop riding completely, because in my program, if I stop riding, the horse should also stop. But I will relax my aids a great deal. So once I get my horse to canter, I relax. I take my legs off. I don't throw them off their sides, but I quit asking with my legs. I'll keep my seat moving to tell the horse, you ought to keep cantering. But there's a big difference between that and trying to, like, plod them forward. What will always happen, and here's where people get hung up, is the horse will break down in the beginning. I let it happen, you know? And then what I'll do is I'm going to ask you to go again. Once they get there to the canter, I'm going to stop asking, and they will break down again. Pretty soon, they're going to find out that the place where they're going to feel the most relief and comfort is if they maintain that gait.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's a little bit like not propping them up. And ideally, because, you know, you know what you're doing and the rest of us are struggling, You ask your horse to, well, you keep using the canter or lope scenario. You ask the horse for the gate. He responds, yes, I'm cantering. So you relax the aid that says canter now, and you continue with supporting the horse's canter and balance with passive aids, I'll call those. And he goes, oh, shoo. And he breaks back down into a trot, and you immediately say, oh, nope, canter. You're also teaching that horse self-carriage. You're never propping him up by using those aids for the canter transition for too long. Because most of the time when we have horses that hang on our hands or lean on our shoulder or don't move away from the leg, most of the time we've accidentally taught that behavior by going, oh, we've got to keep cantering. Oh, I've got to hold him up. And we, without even knowing it, we taught the horse to ignore the aid to get the canter. And then we've taught the horse to rely on our body to carry himself around instead of carrying himself in self-carriage, which is where horses that are started by really good professionals turn out to be such lovely rides, is because that professional rider was careful to not do that.
Yep, I completely agree. And it's really hard as a rider to let go of that. Please don't break down.
You're allowed to make a mistake. Nobody's going to slap you in the face.
Yeah, right? let them do that. Let them figure that out. And then when they do, it's not about, oh, you know, you made the wrong decision. I'm going to punish you. It's just going to be like, okay, canter again. And so they'll hit the canter, and then you relax, and then they break down. And you're like, okay, canter again. And you're better off popping in and out, you know, of that transition and practicing that transition.
And it's amazing how fast they go, oh, I'm supposed to keep cantering.
Exactly.
Well, that's another excellent question and more fun stuff to do with my horse in the arena. And we're going to take another break, and we're going to hear from the lovely folks from Horseware. And then we're going to come back with our first guest. Another long, tough fly season is right around the corner. And the only choice for this fly season are the Amigo range of fly sheets, because they're built tough and feature the latest in design comfort, bug-busting technology, and sun-protecting fabrics. And the Amigo range has a fly sheet for every budget, from the Amigo Bug Buster Vamoose with no fly zone to the Amigo Bug Rug fly sheet. Find Amigo fly sheets at your local or online retailer, or you can visit horseware.com. That's Horseware, HORSEWARE.com.
There's our guest. Yay. Hi, Dana. Okay. Sorry we had to call you live on the air because we're having an issue with our computer this morning. Say hi to Glenn and Mary and Jennifer.
Hi, Glenn, Mary, and Jennifer.
Hey. How's it going?
It is going. We're in transit to Reno in the middle of nowhere.
Awesome. Okay, so I didn't do an intro. So this is Dana Lavelle from Running Tea Horsemanship up from Shoshone, Idaho. You're on your way to Reno. What are you doing in Reno?
Well, we are on our way to Reno to pick up my Reno Extreme Mustang Makeover horse tomorrow morning.
Awesome. And so how many makeovers have you done before?
I have done one Extreme Mustang Makeover through Mustang Heritage Foundation in 2014. And then I also did a similar event where we had about the same amount of time at the end of 2014 in Utah called Impact of the Horse.
And that is a really cool competition. I'm not sure if I have the exact rules right, but it's not only Mustangs, it's also domestic horses that are competing against the Mustangs. But isn't it like there's domestic horses competing against 100-day Mustangs? Am I right about that?
Well, the 100-day Mustangs are in their own division, and they compete against each other. And then there's another class where domestics compete against the Mustangs. So the 100 days are in their own division, yes. But then you have the Mustangs against the domestics. And their setup's a little different than the makeover. It's kind of a natural trail course, and there's mountains and bridges and teeter-totters. And
Yeah,
cool,
they have
like
a
that.
Really cool setup. They make these huge, like, 10-foot high heels in the middle of the arena. If you've ever seen Mountain Trail, it's online. It's a little bit like that. But so with the Extreme Mustang Makeover, what made you decide you were going to do another one?
Well, after the 2014, it was quite an experience. And I went into it knowing as much as I could, but I felt like afterwards, I had a better grasp of what to expect, what to focus on, what not to focus on. I think my first competition with that, I got really caught up in the competition part of it and psyched myself out quite a bit. And then the following years, I got to watch and attend the makeovers and kind of get a more insight into, how I should prepare myself. And then in 2015, I actually had a riding accident, and I had planned to do the makeover in Nampa, Idaho that year, but couldn't because I was recovering from that.
Yeah, and tell us what happened. You had a pretty extreme accident, actually.
I did. I came off of a colt. It was one of those random freak, unexpected accidents, and landed in just a way that I cracked my C1 and broke my C7 in my neck, and was in a neck brace for a while. And it was a blessing in disguise. I was very fortunate to come out relatively unscathed after resting, but it gave me an opportunity to sit down, shut up, and watch, because I'm a pretty active person, and so I was able to observe and watch have a little more introspect into things. And so now that I'm recovered and feeling good, the Reno makeover called to me. It's the next closest one this year since Idaho. They've moved it now to Washington, the one that's in this area. So I'm excited to participate in the Reno one.
Well, and I know, I know most horse people are little go-getters, so I know how hard that has to be to kind of sit on the sidelines and just sort of, watch from there and learn from there. Having an accident, which, unfortunately, as professionals, we all go through, it's kind of part of the trade. Did it do anything as far as, especially starting colts, did it do anything to your confidence? And if so, what were some things that helped you kind of get back and ready to get in the game again?
Well, when I went back to riding, I rode a horse that I knew well, and it was my Mustang from the makeover in 2014. And even though he was still considered green, if he was going to be goofy, I knew what kind of goofy. But there were some obstacles, and there was days that I had to build my muscles back up. My core was shot and my neck muscles, I looked like a Barbie doll, a big old head and an itty bitty neck, and trying to rebuild those again. There were some obstacles there, but I took it really slow. And in the meanwhile too, it changed how I started colt. I feel like I take a lot more time on the little things and laying the fundamentals down in the foundation, and that in itself has also helped. Because even to this day, you still have that in the back of your mind. And I told myself when I went to get back on, as long as my muscle memory overrode any fear that I had, then I would be okay. So I try to work myself through that, and the passion and the drive I have for horses helps to just get me through that and get back on.
Yeah, that's one of the tricky things about hitting the dirt. There'll be times where I'll come off a horse, get right back on, no big deal, and don't even think about it. And then maybe 6 months later, I'm getting on another horse, and just all of a sudden, you'll just have this feeling of, oh my gosh, where did this come from? Where's this nervousness come from? That's a little tricky to come back from. And I'm glad to hear you're back in the game. So with this particular Mustang, do you have any certain plan of attack? Is there a checklist that you like to do when you're working with your colts? Anything kind of unique about your program when starting Mustangs?
This time around, I plan on spending a lot of time on the ground and preparing him for me to be on my back as much as possible. And And keeping in mind, you know, to not get wrapped up in the competition aspect of it and taking my time and sticking with what I know works and remembering to stay focused on that. And just plan on getting a lot of just softness and body control and getting a hold of his mind and his feet and doing a lot of above him, you know, on the fence. And I like to spend a lot of time, you know, up on the fence and above them and touching them all over. And I found that I do that a lot more now where I'm kind of up and out of the way and safe and getting them used to seeing me up and behind them. And just plan on making a well-rounded, prepared horse to be adopted and go on to, you know, his forever home.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about this this competition is, of course, you want to win. You know, so you're going into it with a competitive.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, on top of that, it also has to be a really good horse for the public, and so it that's what makes it such a crazy challenge and a lot of fun. And I know what you mean about getting a horse really comfortable with you above them. I've started doing that a lot more lately where, you know, teach them to side pass up to the fence and that's
yeah,
how I actually,
side up.
Yeah, you know, and that's how actually I'll break my horses to the lariat is you can swing that lariat, throw it right out in front of them, kind of draw it back over their saddle. And if they freak out, that's fine. I am on the fence. I don't have to ride you through that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to teach them how to find the. Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, you're fine. yeah, it's well, and you know, kind of an added bonus is they, when you do it enough, they start looking to you on the fence as being comforting, and so I actually don't have horses blow up too often with the lariat. They'll actually smush a little harder into the fence and be closer to me because they're like, you're the safest spot. So that's a really cool exercise. I like that one quite a bit.
Yes, and that's what I've been my number one go-to lately with the cold starting, and a great way to teach them how to find the release of pressure. And like you said, just kind of seek you as the comfort and creates a nice line of communication.
I wanted to throw a couple of these listener questions your way, and we've got some doozies. One in particular that I was reading when you called, and I know you have a couple of kids. And do your kids ride, by the way?
They do ride, yes.
Okay, so this will be perfect. So the short story is, what do you do if your kid is on a horse? This happened to one of our listeners. Her niece was on a horse, 8-year-old girl. And the horse kind of bolted, and took off, but just sort of threw in some little baby bucks and went cantering around the ring, and the niece didn't know what to do, and kind of no one in the arena knew what to do. So do you have any tips if, you know, your kid is on a horse, you're on the ground, or you're on another horse, and something goes wrong with the horse, and your kid's panicking? What do you do? Or better yet, what can you prepare your kid for in case that happens? What would be your advice there?
Well, if you're in a situation where you haven't prepared your child, and I've been in this situation where your kid's on a horse that takes off, is remembering not to panic or scream, and especially not to run after the horse, and especially running after them screaming. Because that's only going to amplify the situation, not just the horse, but then the child on the horse. So remaining calm and trying to instruct the child from the ground in the best way that you can, and then in a controlled manner, try to contain the horse, whether it's having somebody on another horse try to catch the horse's attention, or step out in a way where you're not chasing the horse and you can kind of block their path of travel. And beforehand, before that happens, if you can prevent it, you know, going over with the child in a way that they can understand that's age appropriate, you know, what to do if that happens, and then practice it and give them, you know, that confidence that if they are presented with that situation, that hopefully then, and the more you practice it, it becomes muscle memory for the child that then they might be able to, you know, pull the horse's head around. or, reach down, grab the rein, and maybe grab the horn of the front of the saddle with their other hand, and give them the tools that they can successfully get through that, hopefully without getting hurt or coming off.
Yeah, I think that's really important. If your child knows that there's a plan, and, sometimes we just don't find out about these things, and maybe it's necessary to prepare for it until it happens. And I've had a horse that I own that is broke to death, and this didn't happen with a kid, but it was a beginner rider. And this horse is a little reiner, but he's slow and easygoing. Nothing fazes him. But she was loping him around, and he turned a corner in a way that he thought, oh, I'm fencing, which he knows to lope and build speed all the way to the fence and stop at the fence. Well, that can be kind of hard and scary to ride if you're a beginner. And I had actually told this person beforehand, I said, okay, here's a one-rein stop, which is, where you take their head around, get them to yield their hindquarters all the way to a stop. And I had told her about it, and I had her practice it a couple of times. And as this horse was taking her to the fence, I'm like, oh, if he stops into the fence, she's going to have a hard time riding it. I'm screaming, not screaming, but yelling, one rein stop, one rein stop. And she didn't move. And so that taught me as a teacher, okay, it is not good enough just to say, here's your one rein stop, let's practice it three times, now off you go. So I would say, I would add to that with your kids, not just practice it, but practice it until it's muscle memory. So like you were saying with your Mustang, you're hoping muscle memory takes over. That's what you need to do as, when you're teaching a beginner rider or when you're teaching a kid, is practice it until, hundreds of thousands of times. Have, and maybe your preference to stop a horse is not a one-rein stop, but maybe you have your own version of an emergency stop or a plan of action. But, make whole lessons dedicated to it. Do it many, many times in a row. And tell that kid, okay, here's what to look for. Here's some signs that your horse, may want to get a little feisty. You don't want to scare them. But I think if you, like you said, if you empower them in that way, then, and that's something, if the horse is loping around and your kid may have frozen or maybe she's screaming, you can yell that to them, one rein stop, instead of, what do we do?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it happens, even with the best horses and the best of intentions, but yeah, I'd say have a plan beforehand, like a fire drill.
That's kind of a good idea. It's never a bad idea to have a plan B, right?
Right, because we teach our kids how to react in all sorts of situations. Here's what to do if a stranger approaches you. Here's what to do, stop, drop, and roll if you're on fire, which, by the way, I thought would be a way bigger problem than it ever really was. But you know that. You remember that from being a kid. What do you do if there's a fire in the house? Where's the emergency escape? So it makes sense to have this with horses as well.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Most definitely. Yeah. And I practice with my son a lot, especially my son was there when I had my riding accident. And before the accident, he used to lope around on his horse all the time. And so he had a lot of anxiety associated with riding afterwards himself. And we did just that. We've done a lot of drills until it's muscle memory, especially for him. He likes to know the what ifs or what to do if this happens. And so that's it. Doing it over and over and over and lots of repetition until, and that has empowered him. And he has now started to ride again and trot and try to lope a little bit because he knows that, mom and we've gone over this and I know what to do if something, scary might happen.
Very cool. Yeah, that's a good one. I was glad you were able to help answer that one because obviously you have more experience in that area than I do. Do you feel up to tackling another one? Listener question.
Sure.
She's got lots of enthusiasm. We're good. We haven't worn her out yet. She's not.
Yeah, we're good. I'm stuck in a truck. We're just cruising.
There you go. Okay. Here's one that I read that I don't want to put you on the spot, but I wasn't sure how to answer this. I'm not sure if you have any experience, but someone asked, not really a training question, but how do you jump a horse in a Western saddle and not kill yourself or get so behind the motion you get whiplash?
That is a very good question.
Right.
I've experienced that before. I would say, you know, I would say the best thing would be start by practicing it over trot poles and then maybe over a cavalletti. I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, let's say you already have a, you know, a solid seat or you're comfortable riding a horse and you're comfortable jumping. And so is your horse, that I would, and then set up a cavalletti and start out really small to where that the horse has to have a little bit of a push off to get over the jump and start trying to follow the motion that way. And that it's not such a big jump that you're getting racked in the stomach with a horn.
And that was a big challenge for me. I'm so surprised at how many competitions I've done that are like super Western hardcore cowboy. And they're like, here, jump a 3-foot log. I'm like, but I have a horn on my saddle.
Absolutely. Yes. And you know what? I can say that I've broken at least 3 bras doing that. Getting them caught on the horns. That family Extreme Cowboy race became a whole different show for about 2 minutes.
Wow.
Several times, in fact. So you learn how to keep, you know, and then really concentrating, I think, on keeping your hips relaxed and keeping your shoulders back and your upper body tall and kind of folding at the waist. And trying to stay with your horse that way. Keeping that in mind.
I did a little bit of jumping when I rode English back in the day, and I never really, I just kind of got sent out on cross-country courses and screamed the whole time. So that was my formal education. and I was tiny, and I could stick to anything. So, but I never really developed a formal and proper seat. And one thing that I know that I did riding English was I really overdid the 2-point and really got up and over my horse over the jumps, which, you know, I could get away with riding English, but in a Western saddle, that is just not going to happen. And so I do agree with starting over like ground poles or lope overs. And instead of, you don't want to get behind the motion, obviously, you don't want to jump for your horse and get way up in the stirrups because your timing's going to be off and you've got that pesky horn to deal with. So I would say the trick and challenge is to learn how to kind of let your horse take you over a little bit. And so I would say being able to, you know, you don't really need to get out of the saddle big time if the jump is pretty small. You know, if it's under 2.9, you can sort of, keep some elasticity in your seat. You can kind of get a little bit out of the saddle, but you really don't need to stand in your stirrups. I've seen some people grab the horn. I've grabbed the horn in the past. It just never works for me. I just feel like I get really thrown off. So I would say, you know, just kind of learn to have a really fluid seat over some lope overs and by lope overs mean cantering over poles. But then just, you know, add some inches to that height, you know, and you'll find your own kind of version of a good seat to make do in a Western saddle. They're not really built for jumping, but for some reason, these cowboy races and Mustang makeovers insist. I know Road to the Horse. They actually got a fairly decent picture of me jumping over this gunny sack, huge old jump. But I saw the before and after pictures of the jump, and it was pretty horrible. I would just say practice makes perfect.
Oh, my God.
Yes, lots of practice.
Yes, it's a little bit challenging, that one. So I will let you get on your way to Reno. I want to wish you good luck with your horse. If people want to follow your horse's journey, where can they find out about you and your pony?
If you go onto Facebook under Running T Horsemanship Dana Lovell, You put that in the search bar, and you can find us and follow us there. And I think there's a couple running tees, but we're on Facebook.
If I'm not mistaken, we'll link to it. Yours actually has your name as well as the running tee.
Yes, correct. Yeah, Running Tee Horsemanship, Dana Lovell.
There we go. Well, thank you very much, Dana. This has been fascinating.
Well, thank you for having me. And yeah, we're pretty excited. 9:15 tomorrow morning, I get to meet my new friend. They're going to be all geldings that were gathered in Nevada.
Oh, boy.
4 to 6 years old. And they were for me, very exciting. Well, thank you so much, guys. And we're going to hit the road. And you guys have a great day.
All right. Thank you.
Wow, what a show. I got so many takeaways to work with on this thing. So cool.
I know. We got good questions. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome. Well, thank you very much once again to the good folks at Horseware who make this show possible. And you can find all of the links to our guest as well as our sponsors at horsesinthemorning.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. There's always fun conversations going on over there, and we're always looking for show ideas. And if you're old-fashioned, you can listen to us on iTunes. If you're one of the new and modern sorts, you can get the Horse Radio Network app for your iPhone or your Android. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. It's quick, and it's free, and it's easy to download. And if you like to live your life 150 characters at a time, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is Horse Radio. And Mary, where can folks find you on the interweb?
You can find me at my website, MaryKitzmiller.com. You can follow me on Facebook. I have a couple pages. I have Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship. If you want to follow the progress of these new colts I have in training, that will be for sale. You can find that at Positive Performance Horses on Facebook.
Woohoo! Well, thanks a bunch, Mary, and we'll see you again next month.
All right.